Hello, Belinda. Welcome to the Heart of Connection podcast. I'm your host, Mark Randall, and it's a real honour and a privilege to be able to sit here with you today and have a conversation about the Heart of Connection. Just by way of intro, would you mind sharing a short story about who you are and what's life means to you? Except, I'm just joking, but just a brief intro on to get the ball rolling.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Mark. So I'm Belinda. And I probably would say the best thing to describe my story is that I'm still on a huge journey of getting to know myself and where I fit in the world. But the things that I suppose are important to me are the fact that I grew up at the beach, and so beach is really important to me, and connection with family and friends. I've got a huge supportive group of friends and family, and that sense of community growing up in a little beach town, and still live in a beach town now. And then I guess what I do defines me a little bit as well. So my background's in nursing. I've been doing that for nearly 20 years, and I've most recently become a play therapist as well. And so I've got a background working with helping people really through mental health, community health, child and adolescent health and family support. So that's really my area of passion and what makes me light up.
Great. The transition from nursing through to play therapy, how does that connection come about for you?
I've noticed it's a different sort of connection if we're thinking about being in the heart and being in the mind. Nursing, despite being a brilliant, helpful career and being able to really, really help people, I feel like it's very task orientated, especially in the acute setting in the hospitals. That's probably one of the reasons I got out of working in hospitals, because I felt like I constantly had to say to patients, I'll be back in a minute, I'll be back in a minute. And we're just so under the pump, constantly doing things. We didn't really get to connect, and the same in clinical settings, not in an acute setting, but in the community. Despite having more opportunity to be one-on-one with patients or clients or consumers or whatever you'd like to call them, you did get to connect, but it was time limited. And what I've found through diving into the world of play therapy, and I've been a student, I've only just graduated, so I haven't had a huge amount of experience yet, but you do get to get into a deeper level of connection with people, and it's more of a heart connection, especially with kids, because they're doing it through their play. So it's pre-verbal or non-verbal sometimes.
And what's it like to start to experience the world of heart, the play, for the non-verbal side of it for children?
Oh, it's been huge. It's changed my world. I've discovered so much about myself. And to become a play therapist, you have to do 50 hours of personal therapy yourself so that you're not projecting all your own stuff onto the kids. But I learn so much in every single session that I've done, either with the kids or with the families. Seeing the connection between a child and their parent is the most amazing feeling. I just am so full of love whenever I see that. And it helps with my connection with my kids as well. I can feel that more in myself with my kids when I can recognize that feeling in my heart now. And that's a fairly new thing for me, because I've lived in my head for a long time, and now I feel like I'm starting to really understand. And when I see a kid have an aha moment, either cognitively or non, you know, if they're subconscious about the fact that they've just worked through something through their play, that just lights me up inside, and I just feel so excited for them that they've been able to work through that.
So they've connected it to the aha moment in themselves. It's like the head and the heart.
Yeah.
The head, you know, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, all line up for them as well at that age.
Yes. Wow. So they are doing it in the way that they best know how at their age and stage of development. But what I love the most about it is I get the science behind it. So I understand what's actually happening for them in terms of their development, and the fact that they don't know any of this, obviously, they're just playing, but that if they're able to understand themselves and their bodies and their heart at a deeper level, they're then going to be able to understand the world a bit better and where they fit in the world. And how great's that for them then as an adult, that they can get it. And hopefully it means that they might not end up with as many sort of issues, because they really understand their sense of self and their sense of heart and what it means to feel connection. It's that real connection, I think, for them.
The connection that that you've spoken about, and you use the word love. It's watching that, best word that we've found too is energy. It's like an energy. We sense the energy. We can sometimes see it, feel it, sense it.
Mm.
You described as love.
Yeah.
What happens to you when you see it? Do you, what do you experience? Do you melt? Where does it touch you in your body?
So I think that's really started to get that deep heart feeling now. So I did have moments of having that before, but I think I'm understanding it a lot more now through probably lots of personal growth. And I think really it's just a warm, burning sort of energy feeling. I think that energy, that word energy, you can feel it within yourself, but within whoever else is there. So if I'm working with a child and parent, you can see it between them as well. You can see that flow. I know, I'm going to get all, academic and talk about theorists and stuff here, but I think most people would know Dan Segal or Segal, and he talks about the moi, so not you and not me, but the connection at that cellular level of what's vibrating between all of us when we're in a room together, and that sort of has really resonated with me around. What the vibe or the energy in the room is. And I've noticed that as well when I'm teaching nursing and the whole group have an aha moment. You might have 32 students in the room and you've got that connection, and that becomes almost a heart connection, which sounds a little bit strange being in a classroom, but everyone is connected together in that moment.
How do you... Having this awareness, how do you then keep that awareness on your own connection to yourself?
I think if I'm going to go back to thinking about working with kids, it's probably one of the things that as a student we got told to really, really focus on to be there. So you're with the child. There's nothing else that you're thinking about for that time. And that's been throughout all of the different therapies that I've worked in over time, that I've really, really tried to be with the person. And if I go back to thinking about when I was working on a ward, that was impossible. They were, without sounding really horrible, like sometimes it was that they were someone in a gown in a bed with this condition that you had to treat, and it had to be that way because you were so flat out and they were really sick and you needed to get jobs done for them, whereas working in mental health fields, like same as you, I suppose, you're able to be with the people. And even when I was running groups for young people with mental health problems, we were together and doing things. We were out doing outdoor adventure activities together, and so that was what we were doing. We were all together as a group, and the connection was there. We weren't, they weren't allowed to have their phones or anything else, and so you're really together and there. I think that's the sense of being.
It sounds like the word mindfulness, being present is just being purely mindful. And that needs to take place, I assume, at a rational mind level, but also at a heart level.
Mm.
When you're doing it at a heart level, what do you notice happens at a mind level when you're really present from the heart?
Everything settles. So I think that it's just being able to be, and I'm trying to, well, not even trying to, I think I'm becoming more practiced now at just being in my personal life as well, just being in the moment, but being at a heart mindfulness level of being in the moment rather than at a mind mindfulness, because I think I've taught a lot of mindfulness over the years to different groups, and it's brilliant and it's so helpful, but I think living it is different. So actually feeling it, probably feeling it is the way, feeling it in your heart that you're in that moment and your mind is settled because you're living in the heart moment.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, to always be in the heart is not easy, because in the heart, you know, what we're now sharing is, you know, positive experiences. There's also the painful experiences or the painful emotions that maybe at a heart level too.
Mm. Yep.
And you know, when we're learning to be present, we have to be present to that, yes. Unfortunately.
Yes. And that's something I think through a lot of self-discovery that I've probably gone through this year. It's been a real year of growth and learning and self-discovery for me. And it's nice that I'm chatting to you at the end of the year. So that is something that I've really, really worked on. Like, I have probably never before this year experienced, you know, what the DSM-5 would call symptoms of anxiety. And that happened to me this year. And I sat with it and tried to understand it. Mm-hmm. And also got help. I made sure that I had some time off because I have a really, really busy life, and I knew that I just needed to stop. And if I didn't stop, I'd push those feelings away instead of working through them. And not even working through them, but sitting with them and accepting them and being okay and saying thank you to my body and my mind for helping me to understand that I need to be feeling this right now, and I need to be able to sit with it and recognise that it's my body's way of telling me just to slow down.
You know, I wonder whether a lot of our mental health is the antecedent to a lot of the mental health is emotional health.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, learning to appropriately process those painful emotions, those painful feelings, let them out, just let the body, the natural neurobiology of the body, do its work.
Mm.
It does heal itself. In trying to, what happens when you experience disconnection? Is that a painful process or just a space where you need to just stop, reflect, come back to reconnect? How do you,
I've got to sort of smile and have a little bit of self-disclosure and say I think the thing that happens to me is I get a little bit short-fused and grumpy. And okay. I probably get grumpy with my kids, and that's when I go, okay, that's not fair. I'm projecting my own disconnection here onto them. I need to stop and ground myself so that my stuff that's happened in my day that's got nothing to do with them isn't getting projected onto them.
When you do that, how much does your heart then turn around and focus and give its love and kindness to the part of you that's disconnected?
I'm getting better at doing that now.
When you do that,
yeah,
is that a reconnect?
Yeah, yeah.
And what happens when you meet the pinnacle of that point? What do you experience in your body and your being when you hit that point?
I think that's when I can sort of go, yep. I've got this.
Right. The light bulb moment?
Yeah, it's
the
aha.
Did you just have one just before?
Yeah, yeah. I think it's that aha moment of going, yep, okay, I need to get back to feeling this feeling that I've only really just discovered, this heart feeling of this is good. This is a better feeling than the chaos that's running around in my head with lists of things to do.
And when you hit that aha moment, does the disconnect become connected?
I think mostly. I think there's some things that I just put aside a little bit still.
Which may need to be come back to at some point. Yeah. That's okay.
Yep, yep.
I'd be just curious, what happens, what do you experience with your mental health when we have that, we connect with the disconnect within ourselves?
Well, I think it's that joy that comes with self-acceptance and the contentment. So, you know, there's all this talk often about you just need to be happy. But I think really it's about being able to be content to be able to sit with yourself in your lonely moments and be okay with how you are. I don't know.
That sounds like love.
Yeah, that's it. Yep.
It
yep.
really does. As yeah. I'm sitting here with you, sharing the space with you, it sounds yep. like love.
Yeah. And that's self-love. That right. I think that's the most important thing that's been probably my lesson of 2018, has just been unconditional self-love. Or, you know, in play therapy we talk about unconditional positive regard for the people and the kids that we work with, and then there's the unconditional positive self-regard. So having that positive regard for yourself no matter what.
When you're in that space, what's it like then to share that with others?
It's beautiful.
Do you radiate?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
At a cellular level, what's happening in your body when you're radiating that?
It's like the chocolate that's got all the different bits that makes your tongue go funny in it. You know, the snap, crackle and pop chocolate.
Yeah.
It's everything's bursting and vibrant and bubbling, and yeah, just joyful little cells kicking around, dancing.
You feel that at a cellular level?
Yeah, for sure. Yep.
Yeah. How deep is that?
I think that's really deep. And I think knowing the science behind cells and what's happening and even genetics really, and thinking about everything that's happening within your body and how that can change at an epigenetic sort of level. I know that's getting a little bit deep, but I think if we're able as people to try and connect back into that heart connection and that happy cellular level connection, then that's doing us a huge amount of good over time, and then that's going to be intergenerational for our kids and our kids' kids, you know, that they hopefully then will be able to have more of those happy genes kicking off.
Yeah, it's a beautiful space. And as you're radiating it to others, what do you notice comes back to you in there? Is there a reciprocal energy?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. I think there is.
It's a lovely dance, isn't it? The energy is like the room. The energy in the room is just dancing with.
Yeah, it's the synchronicity.
Yeah, and we don't need words. It's just that it's there.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is the hard part about having this conversation is this: we sort of don't have a cognitive language to describe.
Yeah.
What the experience is. When you reach that point. Does it go beyond the self and to to the part of the concept is to all that is, you know, and I call it all that is because that could represent a god or the higher power from a 12-step movement, whatever, it doesn't matter. But yeah, sometimes I was just sort of watching you as you're sharing a story. It's like, the aha moment's there.
Yeah, yeah.
Where do you go? Where do you go beyond the self with that aha space?
Yeah. And I'm probably very much in that movement of putting it out there to the universe, and I have full faith that the universe has got my back, so to speak, and that everything that's happening is happening for a reason, and that if I can just have trust and faith in that I'm on the right path. And I know if I'm making, good decisions, but decisions that feel right for me and that feel morally and ethically okay within my sense of self, then I know that I'm on the right path. So
when you're in that space and you're connecting to the universe, are you giving back to Mother Earth?
I would like to think so.
Do you need to think about it, or is it just, are you now, is that
yeah,
are you going to analytically, I'm just curious to have that, just check
I
in
do,
on that.
That, because that, I think that's my, I was saying to you earlier, I think that's my safe space still.
Yeah.
I've always been very analytical and cognitive and, and I do go back to that analysing everything, and so it is. It's probably something new that I'm learning to get into more of a heart connection rather than a critical analysis of everything in life. And yeah, I suppose that's something that I am still thinking about, the connection to Mother Earth and how that fits for me. It feels like I'm connected. It feels like there's a real connection between me and everything else. But I'm probably still working on that.
And in that connection to you and everything else, if we're to multiply that and all do that, I'm wondering what that impact would have for Mother Earth.
Yep.
Can you sense that?
Yeah, for sure. Well done. And I've listened to you saying that with other people that have done podcasts. And, I mean, how brilliant would that be? And I think that what you're doing here is really helping that, for people to actually become aware of this heart connection and the connection to all that is, and being able to then find it within themselves. And so then hopefully that will just have a snowball effect and get bigger and bigger. And there's other people obviously out there doing very similar things. And I think it is. I think it's happening around the world. Like other people have said, I think there's a real shift, both at a heart level and at a cognitive level, with trying to look after the earth, you know. So
how do we need to be mindful that is it a paradigm from an intellectual perspective, is it a paradigm shift from head to heart?
I'd like to think you can have both, because you can't just wander around the earth in your heart the whole time and not get anything done. And maybe I'm segmenting it too much, but I'd like to think that I can do everything that I need to do work-wise and in my personal life, but hold that heart connection with me, in mind, while I'm doing it. So doing and being at the same time.
Yeah, because when we're doing and being, we're embodying it.
Mm.
And why can't we do the heart thing whilst we're embodying what we're doing?
There's
an old Zen quote, chop wood, carry water pre-enlightenment, chop wood, carry water post-enlightenment. We've still got to do. Is it about how we're choosing to do it? How we're responding. And self-analysis is, analysis paralysis, they say.
I like that.
And it's like learning to drop, stop, breathe.
Mm.
Yeah, and unfortunately, coming into some of that space is, I don't like what's in there at the moment.
Yeah.
But that's a part of our psyche that we're not liking.
No, that's it.
And what does that part of our psyche need?
Yeah. And it's interesting to think about how enlightened, if you like, people need to be able to get to that level of self-reflection. You know, if we're thinking about people that, if you're thinking Maslow hierarchy of needs, are only able to survive, you know, their main thing in life is surviving. And you and I have both worked with lots and lots of people that are still their world's about trying to find food and water and everything else they possibly need to survive. How do they then get to that level, and how do they find their heart connection? That's the interesting bit.
Yeah, they're at the operating over the reptilian brain.
Yeah.
And whereas he's talking self-actualization, yes, there is a part in the brain that does have that, but it's in this day and age, does it really need to be about that survival? And I'm wondering whether the more we work at self-development having a lot more self-reflection and checking in.
Mm.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
And how do we share that with others?
Mm, that's it. And I think the more, it doesn't even need to be therapy, but the more people can tap into that subconscious or to the creative side that doesn't have to go into the cognitive talking type therapy to try and work through stuff. To if they're able to tap into that sense of what feels good, like without it having to be a synthetic version of what feels good.
Because it's all there.
Yeah.
If I was to ask you now to just to remember an aha moment, be it a beautiful sunset or down the beach, and where does your heart and mind go then?
Oh, it just went lots of places.
You were there? Back at that? There's a memory of that.
Yeah.
And what happened to your mind when you went there?
Well, it just sort of maybe even goes subconscious because you're not up in that, you know, analytical prefrontal cortex anymore. You're back drawing up memories, and they're probably memories that are very significant, maybe if they're just going to be aha moment type things, or maybe it's a new memory that you didn't even realize was significant until you have that reflection.
How do you center there?
I think that word reflection's huge. I think being able to stop and breathe and think and even get to that point of meditating but even if not meditating, having that opportunity to just think and or feel where you're at, connect into your body.
Yep. And when you're breathing, are you then breathing into your body and into your being?
Yeah. Yep. And I think that what I've noticed within myself and probably with work with other people over the years is there's very different types of breathing. You know, if you can stop and breathe really deeply, it's going to change everything again at that cellular level, and you're able to get back to the heart connection. And I've been trying to teach my kids that a little bit about helping them to slow down.
Has your heart missed that connection?
Over the years? Yeah, I reckon a little bit, because ever since I was little, I've been go, 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 doing, 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 doing. And, you know, that was the way that I was raised, to be very involved in lots of different after-school activities, and I was, you know, fairly high achiever and trying to do my best at every little thing I could and be a perfectionist. And I guess I probably didn't have much downtime to stop. I mean, I did in ways, you know, like I probably think from childhood the things that was my most heart connection was when I was surfing and was, you know, out the back and sitting there in the ocean or at the snow and skiing and, you know, being on a chairlift soaking it all in. So real that, and even going on bushwalks, that real camping nature connection is probably where I most felt that heart connection.
I'm an amateur surfer, and sitting out the back, you know, talking, having some conversations. Some of the surfers have said it's like cleansing their soul.
Mm.
What happens to your soul when you're sitting out the back waiting for the next set to come through?
That's it. That's why I do it. And that's anything ocean. Like it's so, if I'm real, and I've done it a huge amount this year in particular, just going back to the beach and diving into the salt water, there's nothing in the world that is going to cleanse me more. Like it is almost like a spiritual ritual. I just feel completely okay again as soon as I've dived into the ocean.
Completely connected?
Yeah, completely connected. Yeah.
Where does the sense of self go when you're completely connected to that?
I'd say that it's a heart, but it's also full body connection, and even through my feet into the sand. Like I feel so grounded. And
your emotional health and mental health, where's that gone?
Yeah, that just all feels like that breathing, like I'm okay, I can breathe.
Wow.
Hmm.
Powerful place.
Yeah. Very lucky to be able to live close to that. Hmm.
During your working day, how do you come back? Do you come back to that space? Do you be mindful of that space? And what would happen if you were mindful of that space during your working day?
Yeah, it's
it's a really tricky one, but I, as much as I can, work in bare feet.
Well, I was about to say, is, you know,
I've got bare feet right now.
I was about to say, is that post-enlightenment?
Yep, I reckon right. It probably is, interestingly. Yeah.
And in some of the conversations, it's really as we hit into this space, you know, it's the physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, the conversations can go a bit deep into all this, all that is I'm wondering whether we do have momentary glimpses of enlightenment, just momentary glimpses of it. And once we start to recognize we're having those momentary glimpses, can we string more of those glimpses together?
Yeah. Yeah,
and how would life be different if you could?
Yeah, I reckon that's what this year's been like for me.
Wow.
Probably was a really, really, really tough time to start off with. And then I've noticed the time. I'll wrap it up. But yeah, definitely getting more connected.
Is there any message for a message that you would like to succinctly, if you could, share to young girls, young women, or just to young men in the world coming through?
Oh, that's hard. But I think be creative. I didn't know that's what I was going to say. But I think that's something I've recognised.
Beautiful.
That it's important to get to that creative side of yourself to discover the other side of your brain.
Well done. Thank you, Belinda, for the opportunity to immerse ourselves in this conversation. It's been beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
Yeah, no, it's been great.
Okay.